to Texas, where forests and cactus and beaches and deserts combine in one state. Viva the Alamo, to big skies and rodeos. Viva armadillos, to prairies and lakes. Viva to cotton, unless we've forgotten. Viva to farmers, the ranchers and oil. Viva to cowboys, now y'all make some big noise. Viva to Texas.
Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, bienvenidos. It is a great day to be a Texan. We are broadcasting 655 miles north of the beaches of Brownsville, 510 miles from the oppressive humidity of Houston, 344 miles northeast of El Paso del Norte, and 322 pleasant miles west of the Dallas traffic jams. This is Pratt on Texas. I'm your host, Robert Pratt, and extraordinarily proud to be broadcasting from the high ground of Texas. Coming up in this hour of the show, as promised, a Friday Texana segment that no one will want to miss, folks. You heard me do a reading of some of the words from this book. Actually, not from the book, from the foreword to the book. You know the book is good, my friends, when the foreword of the book has some of the best prose about Texas you've ever read in your life. Seven Ox Seven, The Story of Some Ways in the West, Part One, Escondido Bound, by Peter Ritzer. And Pete's going to be with us here on the show in just a moment and visit with us. He came out here and lived amongst us, and that takes a brave soul, my friend, to get ready to write this, well, I'd call it one of those novels of a lifetime, but I'm kind of mad. I'm waiting for part two now and part three, because it ends with a very much a reality-type ending. It's no fairy tale. It's how tough it was. We're going to ask Peter about that in just a little bit. Stay with us here on Pratt on Texas. Don't forget, the live stream is up at prattontexas.com. Stand by for update and news and weather from KFYO. Then I'll be back and we'll talk Texas.
Davy Crockett told them back east, "You may all go to hell, and I will go to Texas." Here's a guy that thinks Davy got it right. It's Pratt on Texas with Robert Pratt on 790. KFYO.
I saw miles of Texas, all the stars up in the sky. I saw miles of Texas, gonna live here till I die.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, tejanos all, welcome back to Pratt on Texas. We are joined right now by Peter Ritzer, or Pete Ritzer. He is the author of Seven Ox Seven, A Story of Some Ways of the West, Part One, Escondido Bound, and beautiful cover art. I've got the book in hand. I've read this book and finished it up while I was up in the mountains this fall, late summer, I guess, up in the high mountains of what used to be part of the Republic of Texas, near Taos. And just fabulous, beautiful cover art by Kenneth Wyatt. Just beautiful stuff. And Pete, welcome to Pratt on Texas.
Well, thank you, Robert. I'm honored to be with you. Thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Now, we're going to do something a little different. I played this in the first hour, but, you know, some people, new people have joined us. This, folks, you know, you've got a guy that's an outsider who came to Texas and saw Texas the way some of us do. When even in the foreword of it, you read some of the most beautiful prose that you've ever read about Texas, and you're talking, you know, you're hearing from a guy that's read a hell of a lot about Texas, okay? So I put this together, and we'll play this for you, give you a taste of what's to come, and that'll get us to a break early so we have more time to visit with Pete. Go ahead and fire it off there, Alan. After a rejuvenating stay with good friends in Denver, where I attended Mass in the Fourth Cathedral since leaving Minnesota, I set out for Texas for the first time in my life. Texas, the great state of Texas. So much so, one senses that only by superior constraint does it condescend from its earlier nationhood to fit that classification, and then never without the adjective. It is that big. I've seen it. I've seen the land, traveling from one place to another to research and write my story. And in my work as a field tech, driving 1,000 miles every Monday and Tuesday to trap and count boll weevils for the benefit of the native production of cotton. I've seen its treeless prairies, its rugged escarpments, draws, and canyons. I've seen its red dirt and felt the sting of it in my eyes and seen it climb skyward to color dust devils in their dance across the parched land and through the arid heat. I've seen its skies because one sky's not big enough for Texas. Big, blue, blue skies. Then with some white of clouds, massing to blue and gray. Then purple, pink, yellow, black, red, orange, all at once. Then suddenly a sunburst through all that mess of cloud color and more color organized this time in a full rainbow off to the side. I've seen its prehistory, learned of its rocks, seabeds, animals, people. I've seen its history, old enough to be nearly as big as any other on the continent. I've seen its people. I've met them. Cowboys, farmers, ranchers, townsfolk. I've met their spirit. I speak of West Texas now. It's the Texas the world knows, has read and written about, and watched on the big and little screens. I've seen parts of the rest of it too, but West Texas is big enough. Leave it to Texas to have even more. Coming up on Pratt on Texas.
Hold on to your wallets. Pratt on. Now, here's a man that carries his own traveling soapbox. Pratt on Texas continues on 790 KFYO.
Well, I'm going down to Austin, Texas. I'm going down to save my soul. Get that barbecue and chili. Eat my fill and come back home. I'm going to take my baby with me. We're going to have a high old.
Well, Pete, sorry to make you hungry, but it has that effect on me, too, this time of day. Welcome to Pratt on Texas. We're visiting with Pete Ritzer. He is the author of Seven Ox Seven, or 70 times 7, from biblical reference. As you know, Escondido Bound. Pete, tell us about the book first. Just give people a sketch of what this book is about, and then I want to get into your experiences here and why you wrote it and that kind of thing.
I think the tagline is Seven Souls Risk Everything to Seek a Home on the West Texas Frontier, and that's what it's about. I think, you know, I think the older we get, we recognize that life is a struggle if you really want to go out and take it on. And I don't think there's ever a point where it just levels off.
Right.
I think it's a constant struggle. And that's what these folks... But there's the pioneer spirit. It's a uniquely American experience. And the Western is a uniquely American genre. And it's celebrated throughout the world. I think it says a lot about our nation. I mentioned somewhere in there about a pioneer nation. Ours is a pioneer nation. And I think Texas has its own unique story in that it has a unique background in how it came into the United States and prior to that, too. So it's nationhood, et cetera.
And these folks, give everybody the time frame we're talking about and what they're seeking to do as ranchers and where they're coming from and where they're going to out here.
All right. Yeah, it starts in 1877 at the end of the cattle trail in Dodge City. Two cowboys meet up and ride back to Texas together, and there the one fellow and his wife share with the other a plan to go out in the Caprock region of West Texas, which is still really raw frontier.
Well, the last part of the United States to be settled. And these people were down at the time in the lush grasslands of what we would call Central and South Texas in the coastal plain, where the King Ranch and Kennedy Ranch and others are and had been much longer established.
Yes, sir. Down in Medina County, and there, the whole sheep background of that area too has been lost to a lot of the history, and that comes out in this story as well. And they decide that they're going to risk it all and go out to start their own ranch in a legendary canyon that they've heard about through the lore of the Apaches and Mexicans and Comanche as well. And then this fellow partners up with them, and another young man joins, and they're the three children, and they go up through Fort Griffin during the height of the buffalo hunt, which I think is kind of a backdrop of the story. I think it's, you know, you got the clash of cultures, the Plains Indian culture and the settler culture.
Well, and you have the same clash within the ranchers. The free rangers who want everything to be free and open land that they can use versus those that now take private ownership of land and fence it off. So you have that. You have a double clash of the same exact thing going on during that time period.
Yes, sir. That's exactly right. The whole free grass movement was coming under, I don't want to say attack, but because it went both ways. But and it was pivotal. These years are just prior to all of that, but it's laying the groundwork for it. And the Texas, the way that you could homestead, it was interesting. When I was going out to do this story, I came through Beatrice, Nebraska, and I went to the Homestead National Monument and looked for Texas. They had all the states listed and all the millions of acres that went into under homesteading into private ownership, and Texas wasn't listed. And I just couldn't figure that out. And then when I got to Texas, I tried to find out from, I asked professors and everything, and no one could really tell me how homesteading worked in Texas. So I finally relied on the General Land Office and their publications, and that's when I got the story. And it's unique, again.
It is very unique.
Yeah, and that's in the story. And that it's just another aspect of the story, and the whole thing about land, you know, the idea of a homeland and the relationship of human beings to the land, and I think that's integral to the story as well.
Well, I think also the nature of the individuals who founded this country, God-fearing people who believed they were doing what their destiny was, and that life was not expected to be easy. They were there serving God on earth by doing the best they can with the gifts that God had given. I mean, great stewards. And I think as somebody that has some of these great, and we're pushing these for Christmas, the Texas Land Office, Texas History Maps for Christmas, there's a link there on prattontexas.com. I have some of these great maps, and you're not kidding. I mean, some of the maps just labeled this area as vast grasslands. They didn't know where these canyons were. It was all a guess. It was all a guess from some previous guy's notation. And how in the world, you know, it's pretty hard to map the way the escarpment works and the caprock. And so these people headed out. And, you know, I grew up very near the Smith House, the first settlers here, and my mother's family from Mount Blanco, which you write about in the book. These people, I mean, folks, this was like going to the moon. Yeah. You couldn't get in a car and run back somewhere and get supplies and get help. It seems to me that those ethics, the personal and religious ethics of the individuals, was one of your great motivators in telling their story. Am I off base there or what?
No, sir, that's right. There were, when you read the primary sources and you read the letters and the diaries, faith was pretty much a given. I mean, obviously there are people who didn't have faith, but even the sense where folks weren't necessarily what we might call religious, there was a sense that the faith was still a given, that they were either rebelling against it and recognized that, or were embarrassed about not living. But faith was pretty much a given. And then there were, of course, the many folks, if not the majority, and I suspect it was the majority. I think if we look at the Founding Fathers and how they wrote and spoke, whether or not folks were of an established religion, faith was pretty much a constant. And so these folks that I write about, again, I think the story is authentic, and the kind of response we've had from it kind of supports that. And these folks were people of faith. They saw their lives in the larger context. And, of course, one person who wrote it said to me he was struck by the immediacy of danger.
Amen. Life is dangerous still, but nothing like it was then. But we become a nation of wusses.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's funny.
We talk about that a lot on this show, by the way, Pete. So.
Yeah, I remember when I was teaching one time, they were wanting to put in air conditioning in the school, and the kids were saying to me, oh, Mr. Ritzer, we need air conditioning. And I said,
guys,
I don't want us to wimp out. I said, that's why I'm against air conditioning in the school. I said, I said, you know, I don't want us to become, you know, just as you say, wimping out. But these folks, just for instance, skunks were one of the great fears of people at that time because they carried rabies or what they call hydrophobia. And there's a great story in the book by Charles Siringo about how one of his partners finally gave up on the frontier and went back west. He says, you know, we fought Indians together. We've settled the land together and all that. But the fellow was afraid because they were having skunks crawl on him at night, and that did it for him. He says, I'm not going to get hydrophobia. So I think in the context of people who, where death and danger were right at arm's length all the time, and even closer in the form of disease, et cetera, I think faith was much more, of course, it's necessary, but it was they didn't have the cushion from it that we've concocted today, you know, with our luxury and our comfort. They didn't have that. It was raw. It was like the people in the Old Testament, where when they shared a meal with people, they shared their very life because they didn't always know where the next meal was going to come from. And these folks were the same way. Now, there is, you know, the story celebrates the great bounty of what the Texas, West Texas had to offer at the time. But still, there was always the danger, you know.
The immediacy of danger. I like the way your reader put that to you. I think that's something that we talk about much because I think we're moving, the pendulum is swinging back into that, and it comes from not being, instead of being a rural country with the natural worries, we're becoming an urban country finally with the crime and things that were so prevalent in the big overcrowded cities of Europe that these pioneers left to come here. Because life was extraordinarily dangerous there. Muggings, beatings, robbery, rape, all of that. And I think we're coming back into that in a lot of parts of the country. And, of course, that's why we push so much the idea of self-defense and that kind of thing here on the program. I will tell you, Peter, this is one of the best books I've ever read on historical fiction. Now, if I had one critical comment, I would say some of the homilies were a little long and they need to be broken up. But I bet you've heard that from others.
Well, you know what? What we've mainly heard, the good things were that it reads much faster than people expect and that they want part two right now.
I want part two, too, but it took me a while to get past the first few chapters. And being a big Republican and all that, I really enjoyed all the stuff. I'll tell you, it's fabulous. My cousin Max Crawford wrote the book Lords of the Plain, which is one of the critically acclaimed historical fictions, mostly about Randall McKenzie, Ronald McKenzie, and that his defeating the Indians out here. So when I say it's one of the best I've ever read, I really mean that, and I'm even trumping some family members to say that. Pete, we'll be back and talk more after the bottom of the hour news break. So stand by, everybody, here on Pratt on Texas. We'll celebrate Texas and the high ground of Texas some more when we return.
Right on hubbing down that lonesome road.